Welcome to Straight Talk with Dr. L, where we make complex topics about young children, families, parenting, and womanhood simple. Because high-quality knowledge and information about navigating parenting, family, and life should be accessible, digestible, and usable for everyone. Hello, good people. Welcome to Straight Talk with Dr. L. Today we're going to talk about the power of words. Words have so much power because words have the power to build up or tear down. They have the power to spread love or to spread hate. Words also have the power to comfort or to wound. They have the power to motivate or discourage. Words have the power to edify or to damage. Words have so much power, especially when spoken to children. Because the mind of a child is forming, and the words that are spoken to our children fall on their ears, land in their brains, and shape their thoughts. Therefore, it is essential that we are thoughtful and intentional about the words we choose to use when speaking to our children. We must also be cognizant of the words others speak to and about our children, because the messages our children receive become a part of their inner dialogue, the words that play in their heads throughout their day. Those words eventually form a child's inner voice, the voice they will hear for the rest of their lives, the voice that will be there when they wake up, the voice that will be there when they go to sleep, and the voice that will be there with them every second in between. Therefore, we want to be certain to input words in our children's brain that build up, spread love, offer comfort, motivate, and edify. We want to place words in our children's brains that are so affirming of their personal greatness and value to this world that if anyone told them differently, they would think them to be a liar or a fool. Aside from choosing his father wisely, that is the greatest gift that I ever gave my child. I gifted my child with a positive, friendly, loving, and affirming inner voice. To know my child is to know that he walks this world without one iota of fear or self-doubt. It is really incredible to watch. It is especially incredible to watch because my child is a child who is on the autism spectrum, who is fully aware that he is on the autism spectrum. He believes that autism is his superpower, the thing that makes him unique, one of his many attributes that make him special. One day I'll do a podcast or video and let him talk about his experience with autism. It is really remarkable to listen to how his brain works. But back to our topic, the power of words. I started speaking life into my child from the womb, because I was so elated that I was going to have the opportunity to love a child in the ways I had never been loved as a child. He was my opportunity to get it right. And I was and still am extremely grateful and humbled that God trusted me to be his mother, protect him, and to shape his heart and soul. With that, I am extremely protective of the words that enter my child's sphere of being. This included the words used by educators. From preschool to second grade, I would sit in his class during the first week of school to listen to the teacher's vernacular. I needed to understand how she expressed herself to the children because her words would be a voice that my child would hear for several hours in his day. Listening and writing running records of how the teacher spoke would do two things for me. One, it gave me the opportunity to reinforce particular words she used in the classroom, at home when I gave instructions to SDK. Therefore, he would have continuity of phrasing in his home and school environment to aid in his acclimation to the new classroom culture. For example, if the teacher signaled for the children to line up by ringing a bell and instructed the children to line up in their choo-choo train lines, at home, I would use a bell and would make a choo-choo train line of one as we headed out the door. If she had a particular phrase she used to get the room quiet, I would use that phrase when assisting SDK in modulating his voice at home. Being a child on the autism spectrum made continuity of vernacular essential to my child's success and acclimation to the school's learning environment. A second reason for my sitting in the classroom and listening to the teacher's vernacular was it gave me the opportunity to gently offer her a better turn of words if she said something that was outside of appropriate language when referring to a child with disabilities. I stressed the word gently because the first time I had a reaction to a teacher using an inappropriate word to describe my child, my reaction was so strong and caught me so off guard, I nearly scared the young preschool teacher to tears. But I had never heard the word angry associated with my child. He was 4. So I immediately went in about the use of the word angry. Angry is objective. How can you speak to his emotional state, especially considering he's nonverbal? A more professional and objective approach would be to describe the behavior you witnessed and detail that to me. How dare you write the word angry down about my child and then say it to me? The teacher was stunned. As a young mom and a mama bear, my belly was on fire and the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up. That was my baby she was talking about. I got up and I called for the director because I was 38 hot. The seasoned preschool director came in and diffused the situation. After I explained to her what happened, she tenderly yet quickly explained to the young preschool teacher how the use of the word angry to describe a child was inappropriate. The director then apologized to me and gently guided the preschool teacher through the remainder of the conference. I watched the preschool director, and that day I learned. And I have to add that nearly 10 years later, I still respect, admire, and appreciate that preschool director, Miss Karen. And even though she is still in California and we are now in Virginia, we communicate near weekly, and she cheers on SDYM as he grows and develops. Y'all, I love and appreciate Miss Karen tremendously. She and her teachers took excellent care of my baby, and they took excellent care of me. At that time, SDK had not yet received a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. And I was working on my mama bear intuition, trying to figure out what my son needed. What could I offer? What could I find that would help him maximize the greatness that I so easily saw inside of him? And during that time in our life, the safest place in the world for my child, other than my arms, was Teddy Bear Preschool. The love that they showed my baby was second only to my own. They loved my baby. Miss Ashney, Miss Connie, and Miss Karen were his aunties. The word I give my child to identify safe people, people I trust with my baby. Now, over the years, I have grown in wisdom and professional knowledge, and I've become more skilled at guiding the word choice of professionals who have the pleasure of working with my child. Actually, I had to exercise this skill just last month as I advocated for a middle school-aged SDYM. As a child on the autism spectrum, my son has an IEP, an individualized education program, which is a written legal document that is developed for each child in a public school who is eligible for special education services. Essentially, an IEP is documentation of service providers' observations about a child's performance in various areas, with special attention given to the child's strengths and needs. These observations, along with data and parent input, are used to develop goals for the child's continued growth and development each year. This document is constructed and approved in the context of an IEP meeting. This meeting is held annually, generally near the end of the school year, to establish the goals for the upcoming school year. The IEP team attends this meeting. The IEP team consists of the school's administration representative, teachers, service providers, and of course the team captains. The people with the most information and longitudinal data about the child, the parents, boom. Now, before the IEP meeting, the parents will receive a draft of the IEP document. The draft is the teachers and the service providers' observations and suggestions for measurable goals based on the observation of the child's current level of performance. These observations should detail the child's strengths and needs. Now, since fourth grade, I have had SDYM attend his IEP meetings. Because we are talking about him and what is best for him. However, he is the only one who has autism and who actually knows what it's like to have autism. So while I may be the IEP team's captain, SDYM is the MVP. Therefore, he generally starts the meeting by highlighting his strengths and needs and telling us what he wants to work on the following year. And because I am his advocate and respect his opinion and input, I understand that he is the only person in the room who has autism, and I trust him to know what he needs from the school environment. Therefore, I work to push his agenda. During this meeting, as teachers and service providers talk about SDYM, if they use words or phrases that speak to a deficit mindset, I interject and say, "Might I offer a turn of words that fall more gently on the ears?" Then I will word the professional's phrasing with the expectation for them to use the appropriate language moving forward. I do this for three reasons. The first, my child is in the room, and I will only use language that is strength-based when talking to or about my child. The second, I am modeling advocacy for my child. I am communicating to him that you have the power to interrupt and not accept someone's narrative of you if you feel it does not accurately depict who you are, especially if it is a word that makes you feel or sound inferior or incapable. Do this regardless of if the comment is well-intended or not, because unaddressed, insensitive words can live in your head forever. My third reason is, if you are talking like this about my child in this meeting, you are talking like this about other children in other IEP meetings. And I am a champion for all children with disabilities and their families. And I feel like it is my responsibility to show a better way so you can employ that best practice with other families. Now, back to the story. When I read the IEP draft for SDYM's first IEP meeting as a middle school student, I knew two things immediately. One, SDYM would not be attending this virtual IEP meeting. And two, I was going to have to gently but assertively work to shift the mindset of this new IEP team. Y'all, after I read the IEP draft, I had to take a breath. I am far removed from the young mom whose belly ignites in flames and whose hair stands up on the back of her neck immediately. I know more now than I did then, but I still had to take a breath for two reasons. One, I'm still a mama bear. And two, I was going to have to approach this IEP meeting differently, so I needed some time to think. This was a new IEP team. He had been in his elementary school for 7 years. There, they knew me and they knew what to expect when they saw me coming. This meeting with this new IEP team was going to be virtual due to COVID-19. And try as I might, there are some intentions that can be easily misread if the actions are executed outside of a face-to-face environment. Also, my son loved his middle school. I mean, he really loved his middle school. In the short time that he had been there, it had become a part of his identity, more so than elementary school had ever been for him. And when asked why he loved middle school so much, he would quickly answer, "My teachers." So I knew he was happy, I knew he was loved, and I knew he was well cared for at his new middle school. I also had to think, because we are a team, and I needed the team to function well for the benefit of my child after I corrected language use and word choice on my child's IEP. So, after a deep breath and some thoughtful problem solving, I decided to compose an email. Not just any email, but I wrote out a professional development workshop for his IEP team. Now, mind you, that's my day job. I help service providers better engage with children, families, and each other. Whether it's for professional development or in a university's classroom, I spend the bulk of my time preparing to equip service providers and future service providers with the knowledge, skills, and tools needed to best engage with a society that is diverse. And I always lead by stressing the importance of thoughtful and intentional strength-based language. And that day could be no different. So I sat on my couch and composed an email to an IEP team that I didn't really know and who didn't really know me. The subject of the email was language usage in IEP performance observations to foster family engagement. Pretty technical, huh? And not very me, because I believe in straight talk. But in this case, I needed to immediately establish the tone of this correspondence. I am not writing you as a mother. I am not writing you as a disgruntled parent. I am not writing you from a place of emotions. I am writing you as a colleague. I am writing you as someone who is skilled in this area of study. I am writing you as an advocate of families and family engagement. I am writing you to teach. But above all, I am writing you so you will never have to meet Mama Bear. I start the email by wishing the case manager well. Then I let her know that I would have preferred to have this conversation face to face to ensure my intent to support my child and other children with disabilities and their families was clear. However, the current state of engagement due to COVID-19 prevented such an opportunity. I then go on to express that much of the language in SDYM's IEP in the needs section of the present level of performance was written from a deficit perspective. I explain that any skill that a child is not yet exhibiting presents an opportunity for growth. Therefore, when offering a narrative or observation about a child, one should identify the needs of the child instead of articulating perceived deficits. I continued by stating that in addition to being professional best practice, language-friendly wording in oral and written communication to families and students creates a space absent of barriers for collaboration between families and service providers. I informed her that research suggests that IEP meetings are commonly considered contentious and stressful events for parents of children with disabilities. I explained that one of the reasons cited for this contention and stress is the offensive nature of providing families with a laundry list of things their child's not able to do just yet. I further pointed out to her that the actual language on the IEP form speaks to a child's strengths and needs as opposed to a child's strengths and weaknesses. Therefore, the needs section should be written to illustrate a child's present needs. And these needs are determined based on the service provider's observation of the child's present level of performance, as opposed to enumerating a child's deficits. I then provided examples of texts that focus on a child's perceived deficit, an example of text that identify a child's needs. I provided three examples using fictitious children's names in an effort to remain objective. My first example, taken directly from my son's IEP form, but with the name changed. First, I illustrated an example of an observation written from a deficit perspective, like the ones on my son's IEP. Focus on deficit. Jonathan struggles to stay on task during independent work activities. Example of identifying a need. During independent work activities, Jonathan requires or needs teacher prompting to stay on task. I gave another example. Focus on deficit. Sally demonstrates difficulty writing concise summaries. An example of identifying a need. Sally needs to develop the skill of writing concise summaries. Focus on deficit. Mario's deficit in writing impacts him across all curricular areas and require the assistance of special education. Identifies need. Mario's need for further development in writing impacts his ability to navigate, execute, complete, produce learning tasks across all curricular areas and require the assistance of special education. Also, you could say Mario's need for further development in writing impacts his ability to meet learning standards across all curricular areas and require the assistance of special education. I go on to offer alternative language for deficit words like struggle, difficulty with, and explicitly deficit. I explained that instead of using deficit words, one could use words or phrases such as the child needs, the child would benefit from additional support, the child has an opportunity to develop in, or the child requires additional assistance or support to X, Y, and Z. I then stress that as SDYM's parent, champion, and advocate, I would not consider signing an IEP with such heavy use of deficit language. With respect to time, I rewrote the team's observations using strength-based language. Additionally, I provided a Word document with the adjusted text so the team could easily copy and paste the appropriate text into the IEP draft. I then stated my expectation for the team to revise those areas of SDYM's IEP prior to our meeting later that day. Much to my surprise and delight, I promptly received an email response thanking me and informing me that the changes to the draft would be made. When we met for the meeting later that day, the service providers expressed appreciation for the insight I provided and continued by saying the opportunity to grow professionally was greatly appreciated. That made my heart feel good. You know, generally, service providers enter help-giving professions because they truly want to help. And ongoing professional development and training empowers service providers to provide culturally competent care and support to children and families. See, the ultimate purpose for an IEP is to facilitate positive outcomes for the continued growth and development of a child with disabilities. So the words used in that document and by the service providers have power. Because our words guide our thoughts. Our thoughts guide our goals. Our goals guide our actions, and ultimately, actions guide outcomes. The same holds true in the home. Because our words guide our thoughts, and our thoughts guide our goals, and our goals guide our actions, and ultimately, actions guide outcomes. So word choice is incredibly important in the home because our words guide our children's thoughts and their thoughts then guide their goals and their goals then guide their actions and actions ultimately guide outcomes. And we want our children to have the best possible outcomes in life. That's ultimately the purpose of parenting. Therefore, we need to be purposeful and intentional about the words we speak to and around our children. So today, we will discuss strategies to ensure that the words that fall on our children's ears are crafted to build emotionally healthy people who have a strong sense of self and a belief in their capabilities. And the first strategy is strength-based language. Now, strength-based language is derived from a strength-based approach. Essentially, a strength-based approach focuses on the natural strengths of a child, then uses the child's personal strengths to assist in the child's growth and development. So, strength-based language is using this approach when we speak or right. A good rule of thumb when thinking about a strength-based approach to language is consider where a child is right now. That's their strength. Then build from there. For example, if you are talking to your child doing a particularly challenging math activity, let's say you're doing homework, instead of pointing out that your child is experiencing a challenge in trying to understand multiplication, you can focus on the strength that your child has with addition. For example, you could say, "I know you are really great with addition because you practiced a lot with addition when you were younger." Multiplication is a lot like addition. One, it makes numbers bigger. And two, it requires a lot of practice to learn. But I have so much faith that you will get it because I've seen you practice a lot to learn something new before, just like you will learn multiplication. So let's look at 3 times 4. So 3 times 4 is really the same as 3 plus 3 plus 3 plus 3. Let's practice from there because I know you're a boss at addition. The way we think about something influences the way we feel and our perception about the subject. Empower your child by recognizing their strengths and build from there. Essentially, highlight where your child is currently, then make a plan to grow and develop from there. Now, that leads us right into strategy number 2. Refrain from enumerating things your child isn't doing yet or isn't doing well. We don't have to point out what a child isn't doing yet, because everything that a child isn't doing yet presents an opportunity for a lesson. For example, let's say you notice your child is not yet kicking a ball. Instead of highlighting that your child is not yet kicking a ball to your child, as a parent and the child's first and primary educator, create opportunities where the child can practice kicking a ball and affirm the child's effort as they grow and develop in this skill through practice. You are building your child's curriculum for life every day. Now, moving right along into our 3rd strategy, use affirming language. Use language that offers emotional support and encouragement. Speak to illustrate that you have a strong belief in your child's capabilities. Say things like, "I know you can do this," or "I trust that you will make a good decision," and "you are a good person." Essentially, every day we're going to make sure we're saying, "You is kind, you is smart, you is important." Now, for strategy 4, empower your child with their own affirmation. When my child was 3, before he was able to form his thoughts into words independently, I gave him a mantra, an affirmation. My child's affirmation was, "I can be anything I want to be if I plan and work hard." My child and I said that daily for years, until it became a fiber of his being. Actually, one day in April of 2014, as I was sitting in my car in a parking lot after an extremely hard day while going through a divorce and restructuring my life, the weight of the world was on my shoulders. And I said out loud to myself, "I got this." Now, as I said this, A set of little eyes watched me closely, and a set of little ears heard my every thought. We got out the car, and my 7-year-old SDK turned to me and said with a huge smile, "Mommy, you can be anything you want to be if you plan and work hard." My baby said that to me. The affirmation that I gave to him when he was 3 years old, he gave back to me on a day I needed it most, because it had become a part of the fiber of his being. Boom! Now that's good stuff. So my final and most important strategy seems simple, but requires purposeful practice. Strategy 5, think before you speak. Before you speak, think, am I okay with the words that are about to come out of my mouth if I know they will be forever imprinted on my child's brain? I'm going to repeat that. Before you speak, think, am I okay with the words that are about to come out of my mouth if I know that they will forever be imprinted on my child's brain? If you are not okay with those words becoming a part of your child's quiet internal thoughts for the rest of their lives, don't say it. Think of a different way to express what you are feeling or thinking. If you can't, say nothing. Because once you speak those words, they no longer belong to you, but to the interpretation of the child. Much like the toothpaste analogy, once you squeeze those words out, you can't put them back in. Now, I started talking about this strategy by explaining that it is the most challenging one of the five. And that is because we speak all the time. And because we speak all the time, sometimes we are talking from an unconscious place. And with that, sometimes we may say the wrong thing because we're human. We are all human. And if you find yourself in a position where you have said something that you know you could have said better, apologize. An apology does not remove the harmful statement you made, but it does illustrate to your child that you make mistakes sometimes, and you are willing to admit those mistakes when you make them. Also, by apologizing, you convey that you think your child is important enough to ask for their forgiveness when you have made a mistake towards them. In that act, you have modeled a very important lesson that we will discuss another time. Remember, words are extremely powerful. And once spoken, they can't be unspoken, even if they have been forgiven. Use your words carefully. Use your words with intentionality. Use your words with thoughtfulness, because your words have power. So, because that was a lot of information, let's do a quick recap, because I cannot stress how important the power of words are as parents who are inputting information into our children's brains that will become their inner voice. Strategy one, use strength-based language. Use language that highlights a child's strengths and build from there. Strategy two, refrain from enumerating things that your child isn't doing yet or isn't doing well. Remember, everything that your child isn't doing yet presents an opportunity for a lesson. Focus on teaching the lesson. Strategy number three, use affirming language. Use language that offers emotional support and encouragement. Speak to illustrate that you have a strong belief in your child's capabilities. Strategy number four, empower your child with their own affirmation. Develop a mantra for your child that they can recite daily and will in time become their inner personal statement. Lastly, strategy number five, and most important, think before you speak. Think, am I okay with the words that are about to come out of my mouth if I know that they will forever be imprinted on my child's brain? If the answer is no, don't say it. Words are powerful. As adults, many of us are carrying around thoughtless, careless, and harmful words that were said to or heard by us as children. Our children deserve better, and we have the power to ensure that they experience better. Remember, words have power. Use that power wisely. Each week on Straight Talk with Dr. L, I will work through a topic related to young children, families, parenting, or womanhood with my top-notch village, to which you now belong. So, to ensure the topics are relevant to your needs, concerns, and interests, the topics for each episode will be developed based on questions submitted to AskDrL@KinderJam.com. So, shoot me an email at AskDrL@KinderJam.com. And lastly, remember, it takes a village. And if you didn't have one before, you certainly have one now. And together, we got this. Boom! Let's talk again soon.